in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News, is here because he's also the editor and one of the authors of a book published a decade ago, but extremely pertinent to where we are today in the conflict in Europe, in the potential conflict in Asia, and in the use of nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons, small yield, small range, battlefield weapons sometimes called. The book was published in 2012 during the Obama administration first term before the election. There was at that time advanced by President Obama a concept called Global Zero, moving towards all nuclear weapons to be ground into plowshares. However, the Soviets, succeeded by the Russians, succeeded by Yeltsin Russians, succeeded by Putin Russians, have consistent objections, whether they were the Soviet state or the Russian state. The first is the objection, if we're going to change our posture towards our tactical nuclear weapons, the U.S. must withdraw all of its tactical nuclear weapons from its allies, all of them. And at this point, that would have meant France and Britain, but also the five nuclear states, nuclear armed states, that Jeff keeps reminding me of because I can never remember the list. Germany, Italy, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Turkey. All five had weapons stored in their sovereign territory at one point during the Cold War, and the Russians insisted they withdraw those weapons. We've already talked about how that those weapons are a way of gluing together the NATO alliance because its credibility to protect individual states. The Russian demand, however, was adamant. And as I understand, Jeff, that Russian demand was also based on the Moscow concept of vulnerability because of the vast territory they must defend. And they see, and then, and still do today, 10 years later, tactical nuclear weapons as their ultimate defense mechanism. Is that correct, Colonel?
Yeah, that's correct, John, and also a deterrence mechanism, most assuredly. But they talk about it, though, in slightly different terms than they did back when it was the Soviet Union in the 50s and 60s. Back then, they talked about the use of tactical nuclear weapons as part of Soviet military doctrine, because the whole idea was to get a heavy armor advance, get it rolling rapidly, blow through the enemy, get into his interior, and roll him up. And if you got slowed down, then these particular weapons were designed, in their mind, to blow basically a hole in the defense to get that heavy armor advance back on track. And you can even examine the architecture of their armored vehicles, and you can see they're designed to operate on what we could just call a dirty battlefield. In other words, a battlefield that might have not only nuclear weapons being used, but perhaps even chemical weapons. Now, Russian military doctrine talks more about two variants on the use of tactical nuclear weapons. The first is, of course, if in fact the Russians are involved in a conflict and they see themselves losing, they talk about escalating to de-escalate. In other words, moving from the conventional to the tactical nuclear level as a final warning to their adversary, which would be the West, that we're really serious about this and we need to de-escalate this very, very quickly. Otherwise, we're liable to move to central nuclear exchange. The other place they talk about tactical nuclear weapon use is if the Russian state has an existential threat. And that actually gets you some curious things to think about in Ukraine now that Russia has claimed that three provinces of Ukraine are actually Russian territory. The Duma has voted on that. So one could think that if those provinces looked like they were going to fall in total back to the Ukrainians, might that encourage the Russians to, in fact, escalate? So they think about this quite a bit and have maintained these large-scale arsenals to do that.
The Russians have a vision of the world that is quite profoundly different than that one we have in the U.S. There are three things the Russians fear for the use of tactical nuclear weapons on the defense, or they believe the offense would use them. The first is a land invasion by NATO through Belarus, through the censor to Moscow, using tactical nuclear weapons in the way you just said, Colonel, except on the reverse side, blow a hole through defenses and reach Moscow and destroy the apparatus. The second is the U.S. Navy, especially the submarine fleet. The Russians do not believe they have a counter to Navy nuclear mines, Navy nuclear torpedoes, or the use of nuclear weapons off of dual-use aircraft off of aircraft carrier groups. They do not see that they have a defense from that, hence they need tactical nuclear weapons. These are the explanations of Russian military writers. I'm looking particularly at a man named Makarov and another man named Litovkin, writing about this in their policy papers. The third way was most intriguing to me, given where we are in the world. They believe they need tactical nukes because of a Russo-Chinese war. How late was that a concept for them, Jeff? 2012? Did they continue that right up until this No Limits partnership? Do they still think that way in Moscow?
I would think they would have it as a contingency plan, though we now see President Xi and President Putin proclaiming endless friendship. The history of all this suggests that that may be largely transactional. And if you look back to the end of the Second World War, we know that the Soviet Union does not declare war on the Emperor of Japan, the Empire of Japan, until the day after Hiroshima, when they see that this, we're going to win, and they quickly occupy a large piece of territory of what was called Manchukuo, which was a Japanese puppet state on the mainland of China, which actually had been Chinese territory taken away from China in the first Japanese-Chinese War in the 1930s. And they've maintained that. And many Chinese writers still argue that's Chinese territory. And you'll recall during the Cultural Revolution that there was a grave concern, actually some skirmishes between Soviet and Chinese forces along the Amur River in that particular part of Siberia. And there are even reports during the Nixon administration that the concern that the Soviets had about unrest in China at that time, that the Soviets were considering some kind of a surgical strike against Lop Nol, which was the Chinese nuclear testing facility, and talk to Kissinger and others about how the United States might respond if, in fact, they decided to do that. So I think there's been a lot of concern historically by the Soviets, and I would imagine those war plans are somewhere in the Ministry of Defense to this very day. But the Russians have always been concerned about on the Western side and continued even after the end of the Cold War by our maintenance of about 500 warheads amongst the countries that you mentioned, but also the modernization of that, because we've modernized the warhead, the B-61, and now with the arrival of the F-35 aircraft to all those countries for their custodial use, obviously the F-35 is a radar evasive aircraft, has a lot greater penetrating potential. And one of our things in the book that we talked about was at that point in time, 2012, NATO was at a dilemma because the aircraft that many of our countries are using, such as the Buccaneer and some of the older aircraft, particularly for the Germans, they were about to get out of the nuclear business because the aircraft could no longer be seen as viable for that particular mission. And the Russians always said, well, wait a minute, if we're not a threat, why are you still modernizing this force? We would talk about concerns with Iran and other places, which I think made them intentionally or very intentionally suspicious, if not paranoid.
Two exercises, military exercises by the Russian forces a decade apart. The first is Zapad 99. That's an attack on Belarus. And that's the escalate to de-escalate to stop that attack by NATO. But the one that attracted me was Vostok 2010, before the Ukraine conflict. This was a war on the PLA after the collapse of the DPRK. It's striking, Jeff, how they've anticipated all of this. Slightly different combinations, but that's what diplomacy's for, because in April of 1999, I have a quote from your book, you couldn't have known when you put this in your book. Putin is quoted of saying he understands why it's necessary to authorize the utilization of non-strategic nuclear weapons. April of 99. Months before Zapad 99 used that. So what we're looking at is not something that Putin came up with for rhetoric. He's not a military man. He's getting this from his general staff that got it from their seniors, This dates back at least 40 years. Do I read that correctly, Colonel?
Well, absolutely. This is called integrated military doctrine they've developed over the last 30 or 40 years. And I'm confident if you and I were to go to the Frunze Military Academy, where they educate young Russian military officers, there will be a lot of talk about how one integrates nuclear weapons into land combat and land operations as part of overall doctrine. So I think it's just part and parcel of something that's been evolutionary. And then the geopolitical circumstance of the Russian Federation, particularly in the aftermath of the Cold War, suggested to them they were now in a weakened position, potentially against NATO, but also perhaps over time, potentially against China. And how are we going to make up for those differences? We didn't have the material resources to field anything like an army that the Soviet Union had in terms of the number of divisions, et cetera. So these weapons were kept and integrated into thinking as a hedge against those particular possibilities.
Slepchenko is the name of the Russian general. I believe he was head of the general staff at one point, who talked about sixth-generation warfare, and it was translated in 2004 by a man named Alexei Fenenko. I get these details from Jeff's book. The mutually assured destruction policy of the 20th century is regarded as obsolete. Obsolete. City destruction is no longer part of the Russian thinking. And what I take from this is they're more reliant on tactical nuclear weapons here in the 21st century than they ever were in the 20th century. Is that too big a conclusion,
Colonel? No, I think it's an absolute total good conclusion, John. And sadly, as we watch the Russian army suffering enormous casualties and the enormous destruction of military hardware in the Ukraine war, just from a standpoint of that particular army, if the war in Ukraine ended today, my estimate would be it would take the Russian army probably 10 years or more just to get to the state it was on the day before they invaded Ukraine. And that, for me, brings up the second worry. Then during that period of time, even if they were in that position, they will become more and more reliant on their tactical nuclear weapons as a hedge as they see their conventional arms being dramatically weakened.
So what we have today is the possibility that the Russians are not ignoring their tactical nuclear weapons brigades, but enhancing them. I have a note here that at one point, I believe in the 20th century, it might have been the early 21st, they were looking at developing 10 brigades of Iskander. Isn't that their short-range artillery piece that delivers nuclear weapons?
Yeah, no, it's actually a shorter-range missile, John. But when we talk shorter-range missile, it's in relative terms. For example, I'm told from British friends, if you position an Iskander launcher in Kaliningrad, obviously the most western province of the Russian Federation right there on the Baltic Sea, you know, it can strike many, if not most, targets in Great Britain. So it's more, again, you can split hairs on the different words, more of a theater weapon than a tactical weapon that would be used in direct support of ground operations. But certainly it could make that type of a threat. And they see that, again, as a matter of deterrence, as they perceive their threat growing in the respect of NATO increasing its forces, while at the same time them losing a lot of their force capabilities in the ongoing struggle in Ukraine.
Another one of their military thinkers, Sergei Karaganov, he sees a limited conflict using tactical nuclear weapons preventing a general war. That's the way it's positioned in Russian conversation. The reason we have TAC nukes is to prevent the end of the world.
Yeah, that fits right into the thinking of so-called escalate to de-escalate. We'll escalate to these weapons, which will prevent then an escalation on both sides, the central nuclear exchange, and frankly, the destruction of both countries. And it also fits in that broader thinking that they've talked about of such weapons being employed if, in fact, there is a threat to the very existence of the Russian Federation.
I'm speaking to Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy CEO, visiting Professor Dickinson College. The book is Tactical Nuclear Weapons and NATO. Editors Tom Nichols, Douglas Stewart, and Colonel Jeff McCausland, all of whom have essays, including many more of their colleagues, because tactical nuclear weapon thinking has evolved over the 70, 80 years of the nuclear weapon. And Germany has a position, France has a position, Poland certainly does, asking for TAC nukes to be based in Poland. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.